Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast and at the top, click on Try Free and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad and then on with today's episode. I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind, but there's one show that I subscribe to and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting or do I wait for the next one like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of. Authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism, and he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start. Or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is the show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. Four years ago, Janneke felt like a failure in every area of her life. She could not envision her circumstances getting any better, so she made the decision to end her life. She wrote goodbye letters to all of her siblings and her four children. Then she went out after dark one night, found a railroad track to lie down on, and waited for the next train. Today, she's a much happier person and loves her life. In our conversation, Janneke told me about that night on the train track, why her life did not end then, and what she did to overcome her problem and become someone who enjoys each day. You can see pictures of her, as well as lots of other thought-provoking content, on my Instagram, which is, What Was That Like? And now, here's Janneke. Janneke, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're Swedish by birth, right?
Yes.
I understand in Sweden, the language in Sweden is Swedish or Finnish in some places. Is that right?
No, it's the opposite. In Finland, there is Finnish and Swedish.
Ah, okay. So you're, Sweden is all Swedish.
Yes.
Okay. How did you come to speak such good English?
I had a very good teacher, I think, from when I started to learn English.
And is it standard to teach English in schools over there?
Yes, we learn from the age of 8 or 9.
You have quite an amazing story to tell, and I want to get into the details of that. But part of that story is what led up to it. So I want to just find out what was your kind of your background before it led to that fateful day about 4 years ago. You got married and moved to Stockholm?
Yeah.
Stockholm's a pretty big city, right?
Well, it depends what you compare it to, but 1.5 million inhabitants, I think.
Did you enjoy living there?
Not particularly. I had no friends of my own. I stole the friends of my husband. But when we got divorced, I had no friends at all. I'm quite lazy socially, so.
Are you kind of an introvert?
Yeah.
How long after you got married were you divorced?
Well, 2.5 years. Because we married in the end of our relationship, as opposed to what you usually do, yeah.
But did you stay in Stockholm then?
Yeah. We had 4 kids together that moved between us, so we had to live quite close.
And how old were the kids at that point, roughly?
The youngest one was 2.5, and then 4.5, 7 and 8.
Being sort of introverted and not outgoing or extremely outgoing socially, how did you manage that living in a big city?
I had a job that I could do from home. I did the subtitling for TV shows and so on. And I could do that from my flat. So I did that. Didn't go out very much. I got a few friends, but I didn't socialize very much until I had to quit that job and search for another one.
How would you describe your mental outlook, or what was it that led to the decision to eventually try to take your own life?
Because I felt like I had failed at everything. I had big dreams when I was younger. And I didn't even come close to them. And then I didn't succeed in my marriage. I divorced my husband and I couldn't keep a job. So, pretty much that. I saw myself as a failure.
But what about your children? Did you consider that to be a success of your life?
Well, yes. The four good things I did in my life.
Were you clinically depressed?
Yeah. I was, later on, I was diagnosed as a bipolar. I went on an emotional roller coaster since I was a teenager, and I knew I had depressions. But I always thought when I was manic, I was myself. That's the kind of mindset that I enjoyed. So that must be who I am, right? And then I had depressions, but I always got out of them and, you know, got back to the real me again. I knew the depression would fade sooner or later.
So you went like that in that type of roller coaster, so to speak, for quite a few years.
Yes.
Was there kind of a trigger or anything that caused you to decide, nope, this is it, I'm done?
Not really. I didn't think I was depressed at that time. I just had enough of being who I was, you know, not getting anywhere in life, not doing anything. Yeah.
You got to that point. What do you remember? What day it was?
It was in the beginning of August 2014, 5th or 6th or something like that.
How long in advance did you plan what you were going to do?
A couple or 3 months in advance, I think.
What did that planning look like? I mean, what were the thoughts going through your head in thinking about this?
I had to clean out my flat. I had to, tidy up, make sure the kids would have money to pay my due rents, which were three, or would be three, because I didn't have any money. I didn't work. I didn't have unemployment benefits. I didn't have anything to pay my rent for. And I thought, well, if you talk about trigger, the main thing that made me make up my mind was that if I didn't pay my rent, I would get evicted. And I thought it would be better for my kids to have a mother that committed suicide than have a mother who was homeless.
That's one of the things that I was thinking about is in talking about this is when you're planning to end your life, I would think that you would consider how your friends and family would react to that, and especially your children. But in your case, you were thinking that it would be better for them if you did that rather than for you to be homeless.
Yeah, well, it's not. If you have made up your mind, you sort of find reasons not to go ahead and do it, I think. And I thought a lot about what my kids would think. I wrote them letters, farewell notes. And I thought, well, they are going to be angry, disappointed, very sad, but they will get over it.
How many people did you send notes to?
All of my three siblings and my four kids and my landlord.
Can you give us an idea of what one of those notes said?
I wanted to give my kids, good advice or something. I asked them to forgive me, of course, and I wrote that I hope they would, together make ways to get over it.
Here's my hot take for today. If you see something advertised as a free trial, it might cost you more than you expect. At least that's my experience. I give up my credit card to try something for free for a week, then I forget about it, and now I'm paying for it every month without even noticing it. But when I signed up for Rocket Money, that ridiculous waste came to a screeching halt. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It lets you see all of your subscriptions listed right there in one place. When you see a subscription you're paying for but you don't want, do you really want to spend an hour on the phone trying to track down some customer service agent to cancel it? Rocket Money can help you get rid of it with just a few taps. They also give me this great dashboard so I can see what I've spent this month compared to last month. And they'll even try to negotiate lower bills for me by up to 20%, so I'm spending less and saving more. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions. saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/whatwas. That's rocketmoney.com/whatwas. rocketmoney.com/whatwas.
I made a decision a long time ago. When I'm out riding my bike each morning and I cross paths with someone, I always smile at that person. And most people smile back. But I do it because even though it's a little thing, it makes a big difference for me, and maybe for them. It's just a fact. Small actions can bring big benefits. In the same way, it's also true that taking care of your gut can support the health of the rest of your body. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits not just your gut, but your skin and heart health too. Seed DSO1 is part of my morning routine. If you can call it a routine, it's just two little capsules. And I feel amazing. It helps maintain the health of my heart, and it promotes regularity, which I can attest to. Sorry, that may be a little TMI there. For me, it's great that it's vegan, but it's also sugar-free, soy-free, peanut-free, gluten-free, and has no preservatives. It doesn't even need refrigeration. DSO1 has so many benefits, including the fact that it's backed by a lot of science, but I've barely scratched the surface here. What I can say, though, is that my body feels great, and I've got a promo code so you can see the benefits for yourself.
Trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/what and use code 25what to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/what. Code 25what.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And did you send the notes by mail?
No, I left them to my siblings. I sent them by mail, but to my kids, I left them in the flat.
Knowing that they would find them, of course.
Yeah.
So when you're thinking about this, how did you come up? You decided to go and just lay down on the railroad track.
Yeah.
How did you come to that choice, or did you consider other methods?
I consider other methods, but I wanted something that was quick and definite, and not. I considered to jump off my balcony. I lived six stories up, but that was too. I mean, I thought about the people that might find me on the street below. And I thought, if I do it in the dark, in the night, the driver of the train won't see me, so he won't know that he's run over me.
In advance, did you check the? Did you know the train schedule?
No, well, it's a busy track, so there are trains going all day, all night. So I knew there would be an opportunity for me to. I went late at night, about 10. And then I noticed that all the way round beside the tracks were fences. And I couldn't climb them. So I had to dig myself underneath it. To get into the tracks. And then I went to the spot that I had decided upon. And I sat there for hours, feeling cowardly. Because from the ground level, the trains are so huge. Really. And I got frightened, and I told myself, oh, I can't go back now. I have to finish this. This is stupid. Go up there and lay down And at last I did that, but it was too late. Someone had spotted me and alarmed the authorities. I don't know who saw me, but there were, you know, security guards coming down all of a sudden, and there were no trains for some time then. And they came down and asked me how I was doing, and I was so pissed at them. I swore at them. I was so angry because they had interrupted something that I wanted to be done.
So you were upset at them, even though they had actually just saved your life.
But I didn't want to be saved. I didn't tell anyone. I kept it a secret because I didn't want anyone to stop me.
I guess that's why that fence was there.
Yes. Yes, I guess so.
So what happened? You were taken to the hospital, and what happened there?
I don't remember, really. I was in a daze for days. I slept, I think, for 3 days in a row. Just slept.
Why do you think that was? Mental exhaustion from that?
Probably, yeah.
So at this point, you're in the hospital. How long were you in the hospital?
6 weeks.
So the next day, or maybe a couple of days, your siblings got those letters in the mail.
Yeah, I texted them on the way to the hospital and said that I was on my way to the hospital because I had tried to take my own life during the night. So they knew, and they phoned my siblings, and my siblings, of course, hadn't got their letters yet then.
So you were texting your children on the way to the hospital?
Yeah.
And I assume they came to the hospital, right? They live close by?
Yeah, pretty close by. But I didn't want to see them. I couldn't face them, really. The thing is, I had, you know, the picture in my mind was that, well, I will be dead, and they will mourn me, and then they will get over that. Now I had put them in a situation where they will always worry. Will she do it again? Have you spoken to mom yet recently? How is she doing? You know. And that's the worst thing, I think, about not having succeeded in my plans. I think I knew they were thinking that. They have told me also.
So when you got out of the hospital and went back home.
Yeah.
What was your mindset at that point?
I was still angry. I thought it was all this conundrum of hospital and social workers and psychiatrists and everything, and my flat being packed down. It felt so unnecessary. If they had left me as I were on the tracks, all of this wouldn't have made so much fuss.
So you got out of the hospital, came back home, and it's like, okay, well, here I am again.
Yeah, exactly. But I got two brothers, and the older one, who lives here, by the way, where I am now, he said, well, come up to me and my woman and my dog and just wait until you make any more decisions about your future. Don't make up plans. Just be here for 3 days or for 3 years. It doesn't matter. And so I did. And that's the best help I got, because that landed me here where I am now.
How far away is that from where you were living?
Do you know the metric length you
can
measures?
Say, you can say metrics. I'm an American, so of course I don't know metrics.
600 kilometers, about.
600 kilometers. I'd have to do the conversion on that, but that's quite a distance, though. And that was north of Stockholm,
yeah,
where you were.
Yeah.
What's the difference? I mean, how is life different there than it was in the city?
I realize it for the most part when I go back to Stockholm to see my kids, because I feel this annoyance build up inside me. Everyone is busy and in a hurry to something, and no one meets your eyes. No one speaks to you. You're just in a very fast flowing flood of something. And here, when someone walks too slow, well, you can start talking to them. Or if there's a line in the shop, well, I'm not in a hurry. Doesn't matter if it takes 4 or 5 minutes more. And people say hello to each other here, and they talk to each other, and everything is reasonable, slow, and, you know, relaxed. And yeah.
It sounds like that the word relaxed sounds like it pretty much describes, you know, where you are now.
Yeah.
So your brother invited you up there to live with him. What was that when you got there the first day? What was that like? What did you think?
Oh my God, we've never lived together. How is this going to end? How is this going to work? And all I wanted was to lie down and sleep. So if it hadn't been for his dog, I would have slept all day and all night. But I had to take care of the dog, and that made me have to walk a lot. So we walked, that dog and me, and we bonded. And that was the good therapy I got.
Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free, and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus, or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking Try Free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon. Dogs are wonderful.
Yeah.
What's the dog's name?
Shashtin.
Okay. That sounds like a nice Swedish name.
Yeah.
Does it have a meaning?
No, it's just a girl's name. And, well, it's a border collie. He has sheep, so she's a working dog.
So this is where you're living is a sheep farm?
Yeah. Well, a small one, a tiny one.
So you went from living in a city of 1 million or 1.5 million people to a small, kind of like a village, it sounds like.
Yes, yes.
And how many people, what's the population there?
About 500 in the village, the real village. Then there are a few smaller ones outside, but between 500 and 700 people at all.
What's life like today? What's a typical day like?
I work now. I'm a Spanish teacher. And I work three days a week. The other days I listen to podcasts or audio books, or I just mainly I stay horizontal when I'm free. I don't do much, but I enjoy my work. and my pupils enjoy me too. And it's really a flip from worst to best.
So you're a Swedish lady who speaks English but teaches Spanish.
Yes.
I wouldn't have thought students in Sweden would have a need or a desire to learn Spanish.
Well, you have to learn one other language besides English. And you have to choose between Spanish, French, or German.
And Spanish is probably the easiest.
Yeah, Spanish is the most popular. So it's a lack of Spanish teachers. And I'm not a trained teacher. So thanks to the shortage of Spanish teachers, I have a job.
And are you still with your brother?
No. I have my own flat now.
That's interesting, though, that the students there in Sweden are required to be trilingual. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. I think that children from the age of preschool should learn at least one language other than their own. And in school, from day one, you should learn at least one other language. I mean, the earlier you start, the better you are able to sponge it up, in a way, yeah.
And the fact that you already knew some Spanish is what enabled you to have this job, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you could speak to the 4 year ago person that you were then, could you have imagined your life today?
If I had the opportunity to speak to the then me, I would say change now, do something else, move away, make a step out of what you're in now.
But none of your therapists told you to do that as a solution.
Well, I didn't go to my therapists before my suicide attempt, because I didn't think they would solve my problems. And the solution to that problem was the only one I could imagine, ending me.
Is there anything that someone back then could have said to you that would have made a difference?
I don't think so. Not because I was in a bubble. I couldn't see beyond me, really. I couldn't come up with the logical solutions. And I'm not sure that anybody could have said anything to change that.
It seems like when you're in that kind of mindset, you kind of have blinders on.
Yeah.
And even though the solution might be over there, you can't see it because you aren't even looking for it.
Right.
Or looking in the right direction.
Yeah.
For someone that is listening to this now, that may be considering taking their own life, what would you say to them?
It's a tricky question because I don't know. I could come up with a few cliches about, but no, what I would say is, you know what you are and what you feel right now. But if you don't hang on, you won't be able to see what you could be, what you could feel, what you could think later on. And my brother, we have talked about this so much. Death is a back door, but you can only use it once. And yeah, it's true. You can't take it back once you've gone through with it.
And what you said about, I mean, so many times when you want to help someone that's like that, if you happen to come into contact with somebody like that, but you're right, it feels like whatever you say is like a cliche, you know, things will get better and you know, you've got so much to live for. And that just kind of, it seems like that just means nothing to some people, you know, when they're in that mindset. But see, now you have the advantage of looking back on it for 4 years, knowing that that was the wrong decision, and it's good that you weren't able to go through with it. Is there anything else about any aspect or anything that we haven't covered that you want to talk about?
Yes. For quite a few years afterwards, I felt I was mourning for the loss of my suicide. I was feeling very sorry for not having been able to make it through. But now I can see that I'm better. For me and for everyone else in my family and friends and all that, it's obviously better that I didn't succeed. But for years afterwards, I was in grief for not having pulled it through.
And this is even after you moved to where you are?
Yeah. Not every day, but sometimes.
How long did it take before you got to the way you are now?
I felt at ease with myself this past summer. So this is... I'm not sorry anymore. I'm thankful I didn't succeed.
I think your family probably is too.
I hope so. Yeah.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
So you see your kids regularly?
Yes, not very often, but a couple of times a year.
I looked up 600 kilometers is about 370 miles.
Okay.
So, yes, that's a long distance.
Yeah.
And they still live in Stockholm.
Yeah.
Well, it's good. You get to see your kids sometimes. You're happy with your life there. What's the name of the village where you live now?
Näsåker. Näsåker. Nose field. No, not that nose. It means something else. But, yeah, Näsåker.
Well, I am happy that you're happy.
Okay. Good.
It turned out, as I've said before on several other episodes on this podcast, I love a happy ending.
And yeah.
I can tell just from talking with you and even from our emails prior to this that you just seem like a happy person now.
Yeah, I am.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. My goal for each show is to introduce you to people and stories that you just won't find on other podcasts. If you want to help support the show, you just need to subscribe, and that way you'll never miss an episode. You can click on any of the subscribe buttons on the website, which is whatwasthatlike.com. You'll see all the links right there at the top where you can subscribe directly to this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, or on whatever app you use to catch your podcasts. And you'll see there are also links to Twitter and Instagram, so you can follow us there, and I hope you do. And if you really want to connect with me and get in on the discussion with other listeners to this show, you can join our private Facebook group. You can find that at whatwasthatlike.com/Facebook. And of course, you can always email me directly at scott@whatwasthatlike.com. Or just go to the website and click on contact. I'd love to hear what you think of this episode or a previous episode. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you on the next show where we'll once again ask the question, what was that like?